Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
On this Friday, I want to start with something a little lighter. And, you know, it's been about a minute since we've heard from Ben McAdoo. And I got to be honest, I miss the big fella. I have really missed the big fella. I miss everything about this guy. I miss him showing up at that intro presser with that suit that looked like it belonged to King Kong Bundy. I miss the bizarrely oversized windbreakers. I miss the slick back lettuce. I miss the sunglasses. Damn, I miss this guy. Miss everything about this guy. The way he looked, the way he acted, the way he coached. I miss this guy's vibe. Fortunately, he finally resurfaced. He finally resurfaced and he spoke to the New York Post about the New York Giants. And as soon as I saw that Ben McAdoo was talking football, man, I was in. I was all about it. I had so many questions. Luckily, Ben McAdoo had so many answers. Starting with, what does he think about this year's Giants? Quote, I think they've made a lot of moves I wanted to make. End quote. That's my dude right there. That's how you start this thing. That's the guy that I miss. He's chilling in Florida these days, but that does not mean that he's not looking to remind you that the team is finally doing what he wanted them to do. You know, the old, yep, that's why that was my idea. That's what I told them to do. If they had done that before, kind of deal. You know, kind of like when somebody tries to open up a jar, but they can't. So then they hand it to you, and you open it up, and they say, yeah, well, I loosened it for you. That's McAdoo. I love this guy. Tell me more. Tell me more, Benjamin. Well, not only does he like the Giants, he told the Post he thinks they're going to win the division. And I know what you're thinking. Did he forget that the defending Super Bowl champs are in that division? Isn't that just classic Ben McAdoo going Ben McAdoo? Yeah, the team I was coaching is going to win the division. Never mind that the defending champs are in the division. First off, you got to stop with the lame nicknames. Second off, you know, Ben McAdoo, like Ben McAdon't. You got to stop with those nicknames. Secondly, he didn't forget that at all. He's well aware of it. He knows who won the Super Bowl. And he's got an answer for all of you chumps that are trying to clown him. Quote, I think Philly. How much success has Philly had? I think they're going to have a hard time handling success. Dallas, I like their offensive line. But how long have we been saying that? Their defense, they got a bunch of young guys playing DB. Sean Lee is banged up a lot. And their D-line, they got a bunch of guys getting in trouble all the time. And Washington is Washington, right? End of quote. It's my dude right there. That's my guy. That's the guy that I miss. My man believes that Philadelphia is going to struggle after having success because they've never had success. I mean, that's an awesome take. Nothing says logic like a team that was good is going to be bad because they've never been good before. But a team that was garbage last year is going to be good because, well, he says so. And let's not sleep on his analysis that Washington is Washington. I mean, hashtag analysis. Washington's Washington, yo. I mean, is this a former NFL head coach or some random sports radio caller? Is this Ben no longer in Meadowlands calling on the listener line? I feel like this guy should have ended his takes with, yeah, I'll take your answer off the air. Great show. Great show. But my man was just getting loose. He was just getting warmed up. Here comes his thought on the Giants' new left tackle, Nate Solder. Quote, getting a left tackle in there will help them in a lot of ways. I don't think he's a very good player, but I think it will help the team in a lot of ways where they needed help in that room in the past, and they haven't had anybody to do that, end quote. Hey, Giants fans, you thought you were fired up. You thought it was a good thing that they were bringing in a two-time Super Bowl champ in Nate Solder. Yeah, well, Ben McAdoo doesn't. Quote, I don't think he's a very good player. Boom! Roasted! How's that taste, Nathan? Oh, but the arrival of Solder does mean that Eric Flowers moves over to right tackle. So that's got to be a good thing, right, Ben? Well, let's just say that McAdoo is not sold on Flowers at left tackle or right tackle, or really anywhere. Quote, he can't bend. You've got to be able to bend. You can run around him on the right side like you can on the other side. Eli just gets to see it, which may help Eli. End quote. Listen, I know a lot of you don't understand coach speak, but I do. Let me translate that for you. That is coach speak for he sucks, but at least Eli can see that he sucks and see the damage that he's causing before Eli gets hit. See, here's the thing. I feel like we're only scratching the surface with the McAdoo takes. I want more. I need more. I mean, I felt like that was an appetizer. Now I need the main course. I need it weekly. I need it daily. I need McAdoo to weigh in on everything. Because if there's one thing I like more than his takes on the NFC East, it's the fact that he's already hyping his old team to be better without him and paving the way for himself to take credit later on. You know, like, I love these moves. I was the one that wanted to make these moves, but they wouldn't let me. Now that I'm gone, they're doing it, and they'll win, and it's all my idea. Mac is back, yo. Mac is back, baby. Hey, Ben, don't change. Don't you ever change. I missed you. It's good to have you back. What else you got? Right now by Rashawn Evans. Rashawn, really nice to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
How you doing, man?
Good, dude. Good. Good to have you on. Listen, you spent your entire life working towards this moment, and now you're less than 2 months from your first NFL game. Do you have any idea what it's going to feel like to run out of a tunnel for the first time in a regular season NFL game?
I mean, obviously I'm going to be nervous and anxious. I mean, I was like that at every single game when I was at Bama. So I feel like I'm going to be like that. And, you know, just to be able to have the opportunity to play in the league, man, something that I dreamed of my whole life, man, it's going to be amazing.
All right, so I had your new teammate, Wesley Woodyard, on the program right after you were drafted, and he was saying how much he's looking forward to working with you. You're going to come into a situation where the defense has got a lot of talent. You've got some really good guys, too. So what's the transition been like so far from college to the NFL?
I think the number one thing is just being up to speed with those guys. I mean, a lot of them have a lot of plays and a lot of games up under their belt, and they know the ins and outs of football. So for me to be able to get as much information and soak up as much information as I can from those guys, I feel like that's going to elevate my game.
Rashawn Evans joining us. Now, you were a leader at Alabama, and early on, Titans head coach Mike Vrabel put you in charge of the other rookies. So what did that mean to you to know that you got that level of respect from your head coach already, and how have you gone about trying to lead?
I've just been embracing it, man. I feel like, you know, as I continue to step into that role, I think that needs to come naturally. Number one is lead by example, making sure I do all the things on and off the field for me to be able to say the things that, you know, I want somebody else to do. And, you know, I just kind of just, you know, follow the guys that have been in the league for a long time and get as much information from them. And I feel like, you know, from that, I feel like I'll be fine.
I'll tell you something, talking to you right now, you don't sound like somebody who hasn't played his first game in the NFL yet. And one of the things your coaches talk about is the maturity you have and the fact that you already approach your job like a professional. I got to know, where does the mindset and the approach come from?
I would say just me, just naturally how I was raised. You know, my parents raised a, you know, young man that has, you know, has a lot of value. And I, you know, I take a lot of pride in, you know, the things that I do. And I do it passionately, and you can kind of see that the way I play. So I feel like just me going into this, you know, this season, I feel like the number one thing for me is to continue to keep doing what I've been doing and, you know, let everything just happen by itself.
Now, when you mention your parents, I wonder about this, because another phrase that gets used when people talk about you is you're an old soul. How much of that do you think might come from growing up in the country?
I think it has a lot to do with it. You know, my mom and dad, they all listen to old school music. You know, some of my teachers were all old school. So I think that's the reason why they do that. But, you know, I embrace it. I love it. For me to be able to be called that, I feel like, you know, that's something that's a compliment, I would say.
Tennessee Titan Rashawn Evans, my guest. Listen, follow me on this. There's this amazing story, and maybe you're tired of telling it, but I'm not sure everybody knows this story, so I have to ask. Legend has it, man, when you were young, your family had horses. Your brother Alex was a big animal guy. He said you should start chasing horses. When he said that, what did you first think?
I thought he was crazy when he first said chase horses, man. I mean, horses are powerful animals, man. You know, they're like, you know, cars almost in a way, just how fast they are and how big they are. So for me to get behind something like that, you know, you got to be a little crazy and not have a little bit up there, you know, at the top. But, you know, when I first started doing it, you know, I kind of had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, after that, I just started implementing it into my, you know, my workouts.
The Friday edition of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by Fan Exchange. Clones, take your weekend to the next level. Get to a last-minute show. Go to fanexchange.com right now. Click the music tab at the top of the homepage, and you will see tickets to every concert going down in your hood this weekend. Fan Exchange has all the tickets. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. No getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the very best prices at fanexchange.com. Use the promo code Rome. That's promo code Rome and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. Fan Exchange, promo code Rome. Just so you know, I'm a horse guy. I grew up with horses. We own thoroughbred horses. I know exactly what you're talking about. But yeah. Alex said that you guys would run with the horses, especially with this one, Aladdin, almost every day from grade school to high school. I mean, what were those workouts like, and did you ever catch a horse?
Crazy. I never caught the horse. My brother did, though. So I guess that kind of tells you who had the most talent in that area, but, you know, as far as speed. But other than that, man, I mean, me and my brother, we work, you know, hand to hand. Whenever he has ideas, you know, he brings them to me, and, you know, I just try to, you know, work with it and see what happens. But, you know, you can kind of tell the creativity that's within my family.
Rashawn Evans joining us. I'm going to talk about your family in a minute. I want to ask you this, and not everybody knows this. You were a quarterback. You actually were a quarterback back in the day.
Yeah.
What was it like playing quarterback?
It was amazing. That was my first love, actually, my first love as far as position-wise. And, you know, it kind of hurt me, too, when I had to move over to defense. But, you know, the reason for it was that I was so aggressive. I was always trying to find guys to run over. So they were like, well, shoot, since you got the size, you might as well just move over to defense. They felt like I was going to make a lot more money than, you know, playing defense and playing quarterback. So, you know, I went with it.
You went with it. It makes sense. But at that time, when you first hear that, it's tough, right? I mean, you said it yourself. And, like, when you're
absolutely.
And you want to be the guy, and then your old man played the game, your father played. When you guys first heard that, you and your dad, what'd you think?
You know, me and my dad, we looked at each other. We were kind of like, you know, how is all of this stuff going to pan out? You know, my dad, most of my family members are all offensive people. So, you know, having a defensive person in the living room, it's kind of like, wow, you know, things have changed, you know, dramatically. But, you know, other than that, man, I'm embracing. I love it. You know, I was blessed to be able to go first round and be selected by the Tennessee Titans. So I feel like everything worked out.
Rashawn Evans joining us. So you made the transition to defense. And the story goes that you were playing safety, then linebacker, then defensive end.
Yeah.
What was the move like from offense to defense?
It was a little different. Defense, you got to pay attention to a lot of things, man. And, you know, you have to have control of a lot of things. But I think, too, quarterback kind of helped me out to be able to understand that I'm going to be the guy that's accountable to be able to, you know, make calls and put guys into the right position so they can be successful as well. So I think the leadership part of that from quarterback, I think that kind of transitioned over to to defense. So it wasn't that bad of a move.
My guest is Rashawn Evans. You mentioned your family was mostly offensive people. One more thing about that, they were mostly Auburn people. They were all Auburn people.
Exactly.
I mean, think about this. Your father played at Auburn. Your mother has 4 degrees from Auburn, including a doctorate. Your sister was an Auburn cheerleader. Your uncle is a vice president at Auburn. So knowing all of that, how did you end up at Bama?
Man, I had to go against the grain. I did something that was unheard of, something that a lot of people probably felt that wasn't the best decision. But, you know, now that I look back on it, I mean, I got 2 national championship rings. I had 4 full years of just being able to be coached by one of the greatest coaches of all time in college football. And then, you know, lastly, I got selected first round, you know, to the Tennessee Titans, one of the best teams in the league. So, you know, I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Yeah, Rashawn, I mean, you went against the grain. You were swimming upstream. It all worked out. I mean, it was the right call. And obviously people on the outside are going to push back. What about inside, though? Was your family pushing back at all, or did they understand it and they support the decision from the jump?
They understood it. The whole process was very stressful for me because, you know, I had a lot of people in Auburn that, you know, I wanted to make happy. But at the same time, you know, I had to make a business decision. And, you know, my family were right there every bit of every part of my family was there. And, you know, when I made my final decision, I had every single person that was, you know, a part of my family there. They were there to support me, and, you know, we made a decision.
Hey, listen, I'm sure you'll tell me it's because of that support, but when you're a young person like that, man, that's a heavy, heavy, heavy decision to have to make.
Oh,
and then all the negative response that came along with it, how did you deal with that? How did you process that part of it?
Well, I kind of had to just kind of weed out some of the things that, you know, that cause a guy, you know, at my age at the time when I was like 18 or 19, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, influence you to want to go to a certain place, whether it's somebody that you know or love that, you know, wants to see you play each and every game there. So it was a hard transition. And, you know, I kind of feel bad for a lot of these guys that are coming out. You know, it seems like football is starting to become even more and more, you know, on TV and on social media. So it's kind of hard for guys to really just kind of do things, you know, silently and privately. But other than that, man, I feel like, you know, in that situation, it's a blessing. You just have to embrace it. And, you know, I think that's exactly what I did.
Dude, you are an old soul. I think this is really important what you just said. I mean, there's so much that goes into playing football or any sport at the highest level, but it's so different right now with social media, with the distraction, with the fans, with the pressure you get. How do you block out all the noise, focus only on the controllables, and just worry about football? Yeah. How do you go about doing that?
I feel like just... You know, you can kind of put it in so many ways, man. I feel like everybody has a different situation. You know, my situation was, you know, I'm truly blessed to be able to have two parents and to be able to have the family members that I had to, you know, help me make a decision like that. But not a lot of guys had that luxury. You know, some guys are being able to make decisions on their own. And, you know, you can kind of tell, you know, just how hard of a decision that is, because, you know, what you choose can, you know, change your life drastically. And, you know, I feel like, for any guy in that situation, I think the number one thing is just to, you know, make the business decision. Understand that you need to go to a team that, you know, that can help and build you to be the player that you want to be. And, you know, you kind of have to, you know, really think off to maybe like 3 or 4 years off, you know, into the future, man, to kind of see how you might pan out. And that's exactly what I did. I feel like, you know, University of Alabama was going to better prepare me, you know, for the league and be able to have the opportunity to go first round and, you know, have these luxuries of being able to, you know, be on here as well. So, I mean, you know, I think everything, you know, as far as that, I feel like you just got to really just kind of weed out all of that stuff and just make a smart, you know, business decision.
Rashawn Evans joining us. You know, something you said, it's one thing to be a young person and have to make a decision like that, that, you know, it's going to impact the rest of your life and make a business decision, but you had a lot of family support. What if you're a young player and you're making a decision that's not only going to impact your life, what if there are other people counting on you as well, and you're trying to do something that's going to impact a bunch of other people's lives? How much pressure is that for a young player?
It's a lot of pressure, man. You know, you're coming in from high school, man, and, you know, the only thing they want you to do is play football. That's the only thing you really got to worry about, and, you know, make your grades. But, you know, when you transition that into a guy at that age, you know, to make a decision like that, not only changes his life, but everybody around him, you know, it can wear and tear on the guys, you know, mentally. And, you know, I think the number one thing is for guys to really just kind of, really just, you know, be in a situation where they need to understand that, you know, this is truly about them. They are the guy that's going to be waking up at 6:30 in the morning, running those 110s, and you know, having to go into that film room and get the extra film work and all those little things. And not only that, be able to have, you know, guys around them that they are able to, you know, be like. And I think that's a lot of things that you have to, you know, kind of take into account when you're making a decision like that. So it's very difficult decision, but, you know, once you really just kind of slow everything down and understand that decision has to really come truly down to you, I think the player is going to be happy, and the way he plays and all those things, I think the family members, all of that will fall in line.
Dude, I'm shaking my head, because when I went to college and I was your age going into college, I didn't have any of that, man. My parents paid for my school. All I had to focus on was getting to class, getting my grades, and in no way was I ready even for that, much less all this.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, what was it like playing for Nick Saban? What did you learn from Nick Saban? What kind of an impact did he have on you on and off the field?
Oh, man, you know, Coach Saban and I feel like, you know, me and him, we were really in a transition of really learning each other. You know, Coach Saban is a very structured guy. You know, he wants things a certain way. And, you know, I was a guy that was very creative, wanted to do things kind of my way in some sorts. But, you know, as I kind of got, you know, older and, you know, understanding him, you know, I truly implemented his ways and his coaching into my lifestyle. And, you know, it changed everything. And I feel like, you know, to be able to be under a guy like that, I think it does, you know, it does wonders to a guy's life. And to be able to, you know, grow up and be able to understand the meaning of, you know, paying attention to detail, doing all the right things when nobody else is looking. So just doing those little things like that, I feel like that's something that I implemented into my life. And not only just in football, but, you know, outside of football. And I think, you know, that's something I'm continuing to do.
He is the ultimate. He's the ultimate process guy. So let me ask you this: you adjusted to him, and you clearly benefited from that. But you brought a certain creativity to it, like you said. Did he adjust to you at all, or is it his way or the highway?
It depends, man. I think as a coach with him, I think he has to kind of feel you out as a player. If he understands that you're a mature guy, that you are truly there to really be the best that you can possibly be, you know, he's going to be leaning on certain things. And, you know, I feel like, you know, as I got older and matured, I think he began to be more lean. He depended on me a lot more. He trusted me a lot more. And that's something that I earned. It's not something that I walked into and was like, you know, you're going to make me wear this jersey. I'm going to wear this jersey. And you're going to put me in this position. I'm going to play that. It's not like that. It's more of you proving to the guys, not only, you know, upstairs, but the guys that's in the locker room as well, that you deserve to be able to play and be able to, you know, wear that jersey.
He's a member of the Tennessee Titans now, a two-time national champion. He was an all-SEC player while he was there, a first-round draft pick, and starting the NFL dream. Rashawn, I've talked to a lot of rookies, man. You do not sound like a rookie. I appreciate you. I appreciate you finding that studio in New York City. Really nice to have you on the program, and I'll look forward to getting caught up with you once the year starts, man. Really good to have you on, Rashawn.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
There are a million things demanding your time. Contact lenses should not be one of them. With Simple Contacts, you can renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in just minutes. No more doctor's offices or waiting rooms. You take a 5-minute vision test from your phone or computer. It's reviewed by a licensed doctor. You receive a renewed prescription and reorder your contacts. All you need is your current contacts, an internet connection, and 10 feet of space. How cool is that? An eye test from your smartphone. Absolutely incredible. Do you have an unexpired prescription? Just upload a photo or your doctor's info and order your lenses. Instead of heading to the doctor every single year to renew your prescription, take a few minutes out of your day and do it on your own time and your own terms. Please note, this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. It is vision care for the 21st century. The vision test is only $20. The contact lens prices are unbeatable. Standard shipping is free. And best of all, we are offering a promotion for our listeners. Get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome or enter code Rome at checkout. Once again, $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome or enter Rome at checkout. All right, so while Richie Incognito wasted absolutely no time jumping right on Twitter to say that he knew the full story of the LeSean McCoy home invasion and that McCoy was, quote, good to go, the victim of the alleged attack apparently does not agree. Delicia Cordone's 911 call has been released, and it would appear that just after the attack, she was pretty clear on who might have been involved. Now, before I play this, I want to say it is a 911 call made shortly after an alleged home invasion. It's distressing. It's disturbing. But it is important because of what she says during the call.
Okay, tell me exactly what happened.
Someone broke into my house and threw the gun, was looking for money and jewelry, and my son is missing.
It's okay. Is the person still in your house right now?
No, they left. My son is missing.
Okay, give me just a moment. I'm getting help going to you. Are you at that location now?
Yes.
When did this happen?
Just now. They just left.
Were weapons involved or mentioned, ma'am?
Yes, a gun. I got beat in the face. Like me and my cousin. And I have... Oh, my God.
All right, I'm getting units right there. How many suspects were involved, ma'am?
One.
Okay. Where is the suspect now?
I don't know. They left out of my house. But
okay.
My son is missing.
How did they? I understand. I am getting officers going right now, ma'am. How did they leave?
They made us go upstairs into the bathroom, and they shut the door, and then they left.
Okay. Do you know if it, did you see a vehicle or anything right now?
No.
Anything?
Okay. Anything. No.
What was taken?
Okay. And they're just hanging out of my son's windows. I don't know if my son escaped or if that guy went out that way.
Okay. What was taken out of the house?
He took my jewelry off my bracelet. Diamond bracelet off my wrist. And he just kept asking for jewelry.
Okay.
Got something to do with my ex-boyfriend.
All right. Okay, that's fine. Does anyone need medical attention? You said you were hit in the head. Do you need medical attention?
Okay. My face is demolished right now.
Okay. All right. You're doing a great job. I've got a lot of people coming to help you
right
now.
All right. So this is a really tough listen, but notice that she told the 911 dispatcher that the attack, quote, had something to do with my ex-boyfriend. Here's another quote. He must have known the camera system. LaShawn must have told him, there's no camera in the front, end quote. That's an interesting detail because it goes along with the claim from her lawyers that a new security system was put into the home in June and it included security cameras that Cordon could not access or view. An additional note from attorneys pointed out that there was no sign of forced entry. Again, we don't know if that's a fact yet, just like we don't know if the attacker was not caught on the security cameras. But the idea that the attacker allegedly entered the house without breaking in and left without being caught on the camera would seem to indicate some level of knowledge of what he was doing. It would seem to eliminate the possibility that that was just a random attack. Here's another quote from her call. He took my diamond bracelet off my wrist. He just kept asking for jewelry. I think this has something to do with my ex-boyfriend. My face is demolished right now. End quote. Hearing somebody describe their face as demolished right now is very tough to hear. The photo that popped up on Instagram that started the entire story is really difficult to look at. She said she had been hit multiple times in the face with a firearm by the attacker. Again, we don't know what happened that night, what did or did not happen. From the pieces of information right now, it would seem to indicate that McCoy may have had some involvement in that home invasion, especially if the attacker was looking for jewelry that McCoy had previously asked for, and if the attacker left the home in a way so that he would not be caught on camera. Again, we don't know. Maybe it was completely random. A complete coincidence that some stranger managed to get incredibly lucky and find a way into the home with no signs of forced entry, according to her attorneys, and just happened to ask for jewelry that McCoy had allegedly requested in the past, and then somehow managed to escape by a route that would mean that he was not caught on camera. I mean, stranger things have happened, right? Maybe, I guess. Or maybe it wasn't McCoy. Maybe it wasn't luck. Maybe she herself set the entire thing up. Maybe she really did have access to the security cameras the whole time. Maybe she just, I don't know, set up some sort of fake home invasion where she'd be assaulted to the point of needing to go to the hospital so she could pin the entire thing on McCoy. I guess that's possible. Somehow, maybe, I guess. LaShawn McCoy has not said anything since his initial statement, but that has not stopped Richie Incognito from tweeting and retweeting a bunch of pics and memes related to his support for McCoy. Again, I'm not doubting that Richard knows more than most, but unless he knows absolutely everything that there is to know, and knows that either it was a random attack or that Cordon herself set the whole thing up, then if I were Richard, I'd push away from Twitter for a moment. If I were Richard. So let me talk for a minute about Kellen Winslow. Kellen Winslow Jr. is a guy who's come up on this show a number of times over the years. And too many times, it was about the wrong thing. In fact, every single time, it was about the wrong thing. It was never for positive reasons. I mean, there was that idiotic rant about being a soldier after a college game against Tennessee. There was that time that he was sued for more than six figures by a former landlord for leaving a house that was, quote, overpowered with a putrid stench of animal waste, end quote. Remember that time that he predicted the Patriots and the Broncos would meet in the AFC Championship game? When he was still playing for the Jets and they were battling for a playoff spot? Of course there was that time, your favorite incident, Clones, when he was looking for a Boston market and somehow ended up in a Target parking lot with two gigantic open containers of Vaseline. So for a number of years, he came off like a complete moron. But then things took a much darker turn, which resulted in him showing up in a San Diego County court this week for trial and multiple witnesses being unable to identify him because Kellen Winslow Jr. no longer looks very much like Kellen Winslow Jr. So there was a temptation for some people to crack jokes, make fun of him, because that's what everybody always does with Winslow. He's wearing glasses. He suddenly has hair. And then suddenly, people who need to identify him can't. You know, hilarious stuff. Except there are no jokes here. You're not going to like this, clones. There are no jokes here. There are no jokes to be had about the fact that he's facing two counts of rape. Two counts of kidnapping with intent to commit rape. And a count of forcible sodomy. Yes, suddenly the fact that Kellen Winslow Jr. does not look like Kellen Winslow Jr. suddenly is not funny at all. Suddenly, instead of laughing, man, you ought to be furious. You should be enraged. Because it's about to get even worse. Yesterday, Winslow was accused of raping an unconscious 17-year-old back in 2003. And according to the deputy district attorney, Dan Owens, quote, "When there is a rape that occurs and the victim is under the age of 18 years old, there is no statutory time limit to when he can be charged. That's exactly what we have here," end quote. So now we have two counts of rape, two counts of kidnapping with intent to commit rape, one count of forcible sodomy, and a new charge of raping an unconscious teenager. And now this guy is facing life in prison. Listen, you're innocent until proven guilty. It's a fact. That's how our justice system is constructed. It's a core value in America. So I'm going to put everything that I'm about to say in the hypothetical. If he is guilty of what he's charged with, then this guy's a monster. I'm not sure where you come out on the concept of pure evil, but if evil exists, Kellen Winslow Jr. is evil, if this is true. By the way, I don't need to see convictions for all of these charges. If any one of them is true, this guy is utter garbage. Complete and total garbage. Honestly, I mean, I really don't have many words beyond that. I've talked about some pretty horrific stories on this show over the years. Stories that stick with me. Stories that bothered me well after I was done talking about them. But there's something about this that is so much worse. Because everybody laughed and joked about what a jackass this guy was. When in fact, he may have been far, far worse than just a jackass. I'm not saying that anybody should have known differently. I'm not saying that his moronic rants and idiotic actions should have indicated that he may have raped an unconscious girl or that he may be accused of two counts of kidnapping with intent to commit rape. I mean, from a distance, that's an impossible thing to predict. But wasn't there anybody around this guy who thought, man, this dude is trouble. This dude is really bad news. Not just a jackass, not just a knucklehead, but far, far, far worse. And maybe if there was, maybe some people would have been spared the pain and horror that apparently this guy's caused. I guess what I'm saying here is there aren't any jokes. It's not funny. Don't come in here with a Billy Squire reset. Don't come in here with some reset about tubs of Vaseline. There are no jokes. It's not funny. Man, that's horrific. Man, I couldn't be more disgusted or angry with this whole thing. Notice I'm not laughing. Notice I'm not reaching for some easy, lame joke, man. If this is true, never mind all the charges, if any of the charges are true, this guy's utter garbage. If this is true, man, they got a place in hell for people like that. This is bad. Don't do it. Do not come in here or at me with some joke. I mentioned that we had a couple of really, really heavy stories today. And then maybe I didn't want to start Friday with it, but there was no way that I could do this show and not get to it. And we've done that. Check yourselves hard. Terry Francona is my guest. Terry, it is great to have you back. How are you?
Good, Jim. How are you?
Terry, I'm so great. It's so good to hear your voice. Nice to have you
back.
Thank you. Let me jump right into it. Last night, you had Corey Kluber going up against Luis Severino, and you said it's the kind of game that if you were not managing, you would pay to watch. You didn't get the result maybe that you would have liked, but how did you make, or what did you make of how your guys hit against Severino?
I thought we did a great job against Severino. I mean, we got him out after five innings, and, you know, we had really good at-bats. We put some runs up. We got his pitch count up. Against most teams, that would be a good thing. When the Yankees go to their bullpen, it's kind of like careful what you wish for. You know, they brought in four guys that just, you know, starting with Warren and then Robertson, Betances, and Chapman, and, I mean, they're as good as it gets. And, again, it doesn't mean you can't win, but it gets awfully hard.
You know, Terry, there are so many guys also that I'd want to talk to you about in your lineup, but I got to pick my spots. So let me start with Francisco Lindor. He leads the AL in runs. He's top 10 in home runs, RBI, slugging percentage, OPS. And it seems like every time you and I talk, I feel like I ask you how high is his ceiling, but he keeps getting better and better and better. How do you explain that?
Well, one of the reasons is he aspires to be great. And so, again, with the talent he has, and then you start to get maturity, you start to understand, you know, the league, what they're trying to do against you. You know, it's not just your talent, but it's your brains and your baseball acumen and things like that. This kid's pretty special. I mean, we're lucky in a lot of ways. I mean, we got him and we got Ramirez right next to him. They're both still really young, but they're getting better right in front of our eyes. And neither one's complacent where they just are you know, okay with being good. They want to be great. And, man, are we lucky.
Indians manager Terry Francona joining us here in the jungle. You know, Terry, you've got Michael Brantley as well, who, of course, battled injuries in 2016 and 2017, but he came back this year to be named to the All-Star team. Those last 2 years had to be pretty miserable for him. So how proud are you to see him battle back the way he has and make it back to an All-Star game?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because the last couple of years, like even when we were in the World Series, I'd see Brant back in the training room every day. He never missed a day. And, you know, right when everybody, you know, the spotlight's bright and everybody's having fun, he's in the back room working. That's part of why we picked up his option. And I know a lot of people thought we were crazy to do it. But to watch him overcome what he did and then to be an All-Star, I grabbed him the other night and I said, Junior, I said, you take a minute and you enjoy this. I said, because this is pretty damn special. And even just watching him play now in the regular season, you can tell how much he appreciates it.
No doubt. Terry Francona joining us. Now, Terry, I've got to ask you. I have to ask you about Shane Bieber, who's going tonight against the Yankees because I'm a proud UC Santa Barbara gaucho.
I know you are. I was waiting for that one.
And you know it. I had to stay within myself and stay on my shoes not to lead with it. Skip. But, you know, Andrew Checkets to me is a great coach. He's done a great job there. I know Bieber's really happy about having to play for him. There's no way I don't bring this up. What do you make of what you've gotten from the rookie this year? He's looked great for you.
Not just because he's from Santa Barbara. Jim, this kid's awesome. He is so far beyond his years or beyond his experience level. I mean, this kid, I think the best way I can sum him up is we make an error, he gets a double play. You know, there's a bloop, a couple bloops, he gets a strikeout. He seems to make his best pitch when the game's on the line. And for a kid that's got five or six major league starts, that's pretty incredible. And, again, I fall back on the thing, I think we're pretty lucky. We're pretty fortunate because he is a keeper. He just, I mean, humble, my goodness sakes. I don't know if they all come out like that from Santa Barbara, but if they do, we'll take more of them because this kid is so special.
They do. I'm like that. They're like that. Hey, listen, Terry, I'm thrilled. Coming from you, that is such exceptional praise. I'm thrilled to hear that. And, of course, no, not everybody's like that. Now, there's a lot of attention being paid to the Red Sox and the Yankees and, of course, the defending champion Astros, but you've got a really healthy lead in your division. Maybe your bullpen maybe is not exactly where you want it, at least not right now. But when you look at your roster, what kind of thoughts do you have? Does it feel like a group that can make some noise in the postseason?
Well, you know what? I mean, your point's valid, everything you just said. You know, we have a decent lead. We're not playing where we want to by any means. Our bullpen has had its ups and downs. It's the first time since I've been here, you know, our bullpen has always been a huge weapon. And we've had our hiccups this year. And that's not to blame anybody. That's just kind of the way it is. So, you know, we're going to get Andrew Miller back at some point. we're trying to do it right so when we get him back, one, we can be fair to him, but that he can also carry the load that, you know, once we get him on a run, we've all seen what he can do. So that's huge. Then if we can pick up somebody at the deadline, all of a sudden, you know, we might not be a 102-win team, but if we can get to the end of the year and be healthy and be in the playoffs, give ourselves a chance. That's kind of all you can hope for. I mean, you're right. I mean, the team's like, you know, we're playing the Yankees right now. They're good, and they're deep, and they got a lot of ways to beat you. And we haven't even seen the Red Sox yet. We played Houston. We saw how good they are. But you just want to give yourself a chance.
Terry Francona, you certainly have that. And, Terry, you're never going to make it about you, but I'm going to try to get you to make it about you for a minute because you won your 1,500th game earlier this season. I think the standard response is, and it's true, you don't win that many games unless you have great, great players. However, that's a big number, Terry. That's a really, really big number. Can you tell me what the number represents to you?
Honestly, it means that a couple of things. One, I'm getting old, and I certainly feel that. And two, the just the plain old truth is I got lucky. I got really fortunate. I got put in positions where the one thing I'll brag about is I think I set the record for being around good people. Everywhere I go, I run into good people. And when I went to Boston, my goodness sakes, I mean, it was a team that was ready to win. And then I come here and I'm with people that I care about and I trust and people that have made me better. I'm just a baseball lifer. And I know that, and I've been around some extraordinary players and people, and I know I'm fortunate, and that's how I feel.
You know, Terry, and I appreciate that. You're talking about all the good people you've been around, but there's a lot of good people that have been around you that are talking about you. For instance, I've been talking to managers all around baseball, and your name continues to come up, whether it's from Alex Cora or Torrey Lovello. The list goes on. Again, I know you're not going to make it about you, but what's it mean to you to look around Major League Baseball and see the kind of impact you've had on so many guys and so many quality people?
Well, I get proud for that. I mean, I do. I mean, I think... You know, I think when you become a manager, you can do a couple things. You can hire people that are either going to tell you how good you are, or you're going to hire people that can make you better. Guys like Mickey Callaway, Kevin Cash, you know, the guys that have moved on. And so for that, you know, I'm proud of those guys. But I'm also, I think, confident enough that we don't have to have people that just tell me, oh, man, you're good. You know, Milty sits in the dugout every night, and we go back and forth, and we have some amazingly honest conversations. And it's helpful because, like I said, it doesn't help for somebody just to defer all the time. They got to keep you honest and keep you going, and we have that, and I'm proud of that.
Is that true, Terry? You don't want somebody to tell you what they think you want to hear. You want somebody to tell you what you need
exactly
to hear.
Exactly. And Milty does that. I had DeMarlo Hale before. I mean, I've been lucky. We got guys, you know, we try to surround ourselves with good people, and I think I've surrounded myself with great people. I think I've been more fortunate than most.
Terry Francona, my guest, for another moment or so. Terry, when you mentioned you're a lifer in the game, it's so true. And in February, your father, Tito, who was beloved in the game, passed away. Earlier this year, there was a story that Tigers broadcaster Jim Price gave you a glove from back in the day that was signed by your father. What did that gift mean to you?
Well, it was hard not to start crying. I mean, I didn't want to make myself be a big baby in front of, because Al Kaline was there too. But the fact that somebody cared enough to give me that glove, I mean, yesterday, Bob Costas had our game yesterday, and he brought in a card of my dad when he was with the Chicago White Sox. The fact that Bob took the time to do that, you know, I think speaks volumes, not just about Bob, but like you said, my dad, you used the word beloved. I've never heard anybody say something remotely negative about my dad. And this game's a small world, man. Everybody knows everybody. And that makes me feel so good that because I know how lucky I am. I mean, I had two of the best parents ever. I mean, it wasn't until I got up and grew up and got out of the house that I realized that it's not like that everywhere and that people don't always respect other people for maybe their skin color or something else. I never had that growing up. You better be respectful of people or you're going to get your ass beat.
Hey, Terry, you know what? It's funny you say that because not that part, but the part about your father. Because, for instance, There's nothing funny about getting your ass beat, but the thing about your father, like, I, for instance, I personally went into the family business when I got out of radio, just momentarily out of college, and my old man fired me, by the way, because business is business. But before he did, I would go around, and everybody in the industry, like your industry, was saying, well, your old man's something else. We love your old man. We respect your old man. How much does it mean to you to hear that about your dad? I got such a kick out of that. He and I would knock heads on everything, but I got such a kick out of the respect that he got from other people in his business.
That's, Romy, you just said, that's how I feel. I mean, you know, I walk into a ballpark 30 years later and you see the guys that work in the clubhouse or the guys that take tickets, and they make a point of coming down and telling me something about my dad, how my dad treated them with so much respect. Or when I talk to guys like Dusty Baker that tell me that back in a time when it wasn't all that fashionable to not only look out for rookies, but maybe rookies of a different color, and they say how my dad treated them. Felipe Alou, Hank Aaron. I mean, oh, my goodness. It makes me melt.
God, this is such great stories. Terry Francona, two-time World Series champion, two-time Yale Manager of the Year. Terry, you are one of the kind. Man, I appreciate you so much. I always look forward to our conversations. I always appreciate our relationship. And it's so nice to have you back on, Terry. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, man. Take care of yourself. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Hey now, a tremendous Monday to you. Welcome to the program. I am Jim Rome. Hope you had a good weekend. Nice to be with you. A full show on this Monday. Let's get at it.
11 days until
the smack off.
All right, starting first.
Bitter Laker fans.
Yeah!
Like, I don't remember that when Shaq signed, Kareem fans taking to the streets with, oh, hell no. But I don't remember when Kareem came here, Wilt Chamberlain fans taking to the streets and burning jerseys and defacing murals. DeAndre Ayton is my guest. Diana Taurasi came over.
I was just working out. I was looking through the mirror, you know, when I was looking at my guns. No, I'm playing. But yeah, like, we're family and stuff like that. That's just big for me.
So not only did he win that fight, it's how he won that fight. And what can you say about him now?
The most amazing thing.
But on the biggest stage, in the biggest moment, this guy shows up and he shows out.
You know, poor Vern, there wasn't a lot of money left for a funeral, so he had to be buried in a Build-A-Bear box.
Ah! Toronto Raptors head coach Nick Nurse is my guest.
Truthfully, Arnautovs played really well in the regular season and not so well in the playoffs. That's going to be our objective. That is our reality.
Hello, John.
So if I had smacked you once, and I had smacked you twice, Shamo. So where's the y'all come out like, y'all been rapping all the party talks, man. You know it, you know, and the whole world has it under my nose to tell you what it is. Who's mad?
Bruce Feldman.
And he comes from a, you know, not a huge place in Pennsylvania. It's not like he comes from Miami, which is cranking out players.
Whether you're in the hospital or in the jungle, every nurse has got to answer to the doctor. And that's me, Dr. B-Man SD. Bow down!
Hey, Doc, you got run because you self-glossed.
Get alive, losers!
I'm telling you, it's a national tragedy because the Polish dog at the Costco food court was a national treasure. Ben Gulliver joins us.
Jim, my question is, does it count as a master plan if, you know, their big three, it's like him, Rondo, and Lance Stevenson? That doesn't sound like a master plan to me.
What do you do all day?
I like to keep myself pretty free, so if something does pop up,
bounce around. This guy's amazing. I don't know. I'm watching Ep 1. I feel like I really know this guy. I feel like he's exactly the guy we all thought he was. Awesome. If mommy asks, is daddy happy? Mommy already knows the answer to that question.
Daddy's always happy.
Doesn't daddy look happy? If they're this hyped about free pizza, imagine what's going to happen when this guy starts winning games and winning fans free tacos. That answers your question. They're into the guy. They love the guy. They're all about the guy. GM David Forrest is my guest.
I'm great, Jim. It's an honor to be in the jungle. I should tell you that I played in Springfield in 98, and I brought my copy of Welcome to the Jungle to the clubhouse.
Love that.
That's
amazing.
That team in 98 played that CD just about every day before we headed out on the field.
Twitter!
Did Torrey Hart wear his sunglasses at night? I think you're confusing Torrey Hart with Corey
Charles
Hart.
Robinson, you had a LASIK exam.
It went well so far. I mean, we'll see.
You have nothing to worry about. It is awesome.
You just got to promise me the next segment we do, it will be all laser fetish questions.
Hey, you
with the laser right over
I did not have a pouch of Big League Chew, but I did have a pouch of Red Man. I was a badass 9-year-old smashing the Red Man, except on the days when I went beach nut.
You know who else finished outside the top 10? Parody Larry, Josh in Detroit, my accountant who doesn't even listen to the show.
I didn't get the ice cream that I wanted.
This is a jungle. It's not a petting zoo.
And hey, Mona, we're going to win you over, baby. You'll be Team Canada soon enough.
A ton to talk to Joel Sherman about.
Yeah, I don't know if your audience is old enough, but it felt a little bit like Evel Knievel going up over buses trying to make that comparison.
Man,
but
I loved Evel Knievel.
Who the hell I am?
White Chicks was the best movie ever.
How did you know?
Yes, yes, I said it. Don't at me. I said it. I'll say it again. White Chicks is my favorite movie ever.
Oh, my
Can't believe
God.
You had that MacBook Pro just took a dump on my desk.
Dump in your pants.
Come on, MacBook Pro. Like L.A., you're better than this.
Breitbart, or kowtow to the awesome power of the NRA to put you over the goal line. Don't tell me this. People have spoken. Just don't tell me that.
Jonathan Isaac.
My agent, Perry Rogers, told me to tell you what's up.
Perry Rogers, man. How's he doing? What's going on?
I told him I was going on. He told me to say, hey.
Hey! Fix like the old family dogs running into walls and peeing on the carpet.
When you look back at the history, Dr. Dave is going to have a little lot up there carved out for himself, and I put him there.
Saving dying children.
So do the smart thing for once in your life, Rick, okay? Do it for your family, man. Pack up your stuff and get the hell out of here. You're done.
My favorite minor league baseball promotion ever. Nothing whack ass about this one.
That's not whack.
Oh, wow. I see what you did there.
But I have one message for you, brain dead. I'm still here. It was Jim Rome, not me, who dubbed me one of the best callers ever not to win the smack off. I don't want a pity party. I want to take these losers to the bank.
Northern Sando.
So Tyler and I agreed to call that off.
When you kick my wife out of your Northern Sando, that just leaves two dudes left in the Sando. So it's an all-meat, protein-style Canadian Sando.
How you doing, Bo?
A bad girl.
I want to hear from somebody driving up and down Ventura Boulevard.
America.
Trim, fit, rich, and I'm back for round two, Roman.
Rise and fire.
Hi, Naples.
Done in this town.
And I'm out.
Good night now!
Maybe you've forgotten about this guy. Caleb in Green Bay, because we are a week out, I will put aside my take, my rant, my thoughts to take a phone call from a guy who's been in the field, who's done well. Caleb in Green Bay. Caleb, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good, Vance Mac. What's going on?
What's
thanks
up?
For the vine, and thanks for the invitation to the best event on the best day on the best radio show in the country. It's an honor to compete. I can't wait for next Friday. But I'm a little worried, though, because for the last 6 months, the clones have done nothing but go after your staff. And I'm guilty of it, too, but I don't want the smack-off to turn into the New York Friars Club roast of the XR4TI. I mean, we all have eyes. We all have TVs. We can all see that Keith Arnold looks like Chael Sonnen let himself go, but I would never say that out loud, least of all during the smack-off. It's implied that Alvin Appleseed has so many kids that nap time at the DeLauro household looks like Neo fighting 1,000 copies of Agent Smith in The Matrix. But again, I would never say that. And I've always wondered how Adam Hawk has a worse body than me. Bro, I'm walking around with a front porch that's more like a veranda, but you're the one in the chiropractor's office every couple days. You have the voice of a 20-year-old, the hair of a 60-year-old, and the spine of a 100-year-old. You're like the curious case of Benjamin Top Button. And, Jim, to be honest, I don't really have any jokes about James Kelly's forehead, or, as we Trekkies have come to call it, the final frontier. But, Jim, if I could be serious for a few moments, in 2016, I went from Twitter golden boy to Twitter whipping boy, and thenceforth it was game on for some of your most unsavory listeners. And I'm not talking about smack from 9 to 12 Pacific, which is what I signed up for. I'm talking about 24/7, 365, dudes pulling triple shifts, working overtime, offering bounties like Greg Williams in his prime, calling my house at ass o'clock in the morning and leaving sophomoric voicemails, giving my family the business on social media, taking shots at my often hospitalized brother, and finally, Jim, it all culminated this past Halloween when a psychopath felt it necessary to track down where I live, camp out two blocks away from my house, roll footage of me getting into my car, follow me to work, and anonymously post the ordeal on Twitter like a bitch. If I were an athlete or an actor or a president, I could understand the paparazzi. But, bro, you're stalking a caller to a radio show. All of this, Jim, in an effort to get under my skin, affect the head, and most importantly to them, chase me off this show. But I have one message for you, brain dead. I'm still here, and I'll leave you with this, Jim. If they have a problem with that, they can take it up with the host, because it's Jim Rome, not me, who takes my calls because he knows I contribute to this program. It was Jim Rome, not me, who saw the potential in a young nobody from Green Bay, gave him a golden ticket, and was proven correct. It was Jim Rome, not me, who dubbed me one of the best callers ever not to win the smack off, a mantle I will only carry for another week. And it was Jim Rome, not me, who said on June 19th, and I quote, Caleb versus everybody. I don't want sympathy. I don't want a pity party. I want to take these losers to the bank. To the blood bank. Take your best shot, tough guys. I'll see you in my driveway on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin. Rack him. Y'all can take it up with me. I did say all those things. Caleb in Green Bay. The B-I-C. Brad in Corona. Brad, what's going on? Good morning.
Jimothy, good morning. How you doing, bud?
Good, bud. How about you, Brad? What's up?
I'm doing good. Hey, just want to let you know, Chad in L.A. is plus 1,400 on the Stucknut odds because he sucks, Jim. Quick question, though, about the Chad in L.A. RSVP call we just heard. Chad, how do you RSVP to something you're not invited to or wanted at? Dude, you're not even second hour anymore. You're not even first hour anymore. No one remembers you, Chad. You're now a guy who needs to start furiously dialing 800-636-8686 at about 8 a.m. Pacific time Friday, and then hope to God Mona in Knoxville doesn't call in and bump your ass out of your spot. Jim, also, quick side note, I know what happened to Mike in Indy also. Yeah, that guy's a bitch, Jim. And by the way, Caleb, I enjoyed your RSVP call today, too. You were talking about how some dude was stalking you and posting up down the street from your house, and then he followed you all the way inside of your work. But how do we know, Caleb, that that guy just wasn't hungry for a Subway sandwich when he went in there? Come on, man. And speaking of sandwiches, Jim, last week Matt in Vancouver called in and admitted that him and Tyler had a shared calendar appointment for a Northern Sando with my wife. But apparently they kicked her out of it because she looks like a potato. Matt, I'm confused. When you kick my wife out of your Northern Sando, that just leaves two dudes left in the Sando? So it's an all-meat, protein-style Canadian Sando? I mean, it's 2018. I accept you and Tyler for whoever you are and whoever you guys want to be, but there's no need to make up fake excuses just to get my wife out of there, dude. That ain't cool. And lastly, Jim, quick shout-out to all the lames in the smack-off next week, looking at their scripts right now, trying to figure out how they're going to beat me. And I know exactly what all of you are doing. You're thinking, how can I get someone else besides myself on my call next week so that people forget about my lack of smack? And I want to encourage all of you guys to leave the gimmicks, the other people, the hacks. Leave them all out of your phone call and just bring you and enjoy losing. See you next week, Jimbo.
Bradley, see you next week. This guy has been in the smack off, not last year, but the year before. Cal in Vegas wants in. What's going on, Cal? How are you?
Hey, I'm not too good. Brad, thanks for the headache. And my name is Cal, not Cam. Jim, I can't believe you didn't get into the Hall of Fame. I think they're trolling you for free publicity. I mean, nobody knew that Hall of Fame even existed until you mentioned it. Jim, I noticed you also dusted off Jeff in Richmond and his rival, Oral, from Denver. I mean, your 55 to 85 demographic is all fired up for that. Hey, New York, thanks for putting my pick up on TV. That's for all you lady clones. I have the most female followers at Cal in Vegas because I'm shockingly good-looking. Now, I want to give a quick shout-out to your disheveled producer, Adam Hawk. If you're tuning in on CBS Sportsnet, he's that hipster sitting in the corner. A nice shirt, Adam. That looks like something straight out of that 70s show. And I started a GoFundMe page so we can buy Hawk some decent work clothes. Go to www.newgearforsparrow@yahoo.com. That poor guy picks his clothes out of Goodwill bins. I mean, behind him is, quote, producer Keith Arnold. Keith, what do you do besides stand there and laugh at your own jokes all morning? Like some big doofus. And good work if you can get it. Last time I was here, Alvin dropped a hammer on me. Alvin, I love the fact that you sit in a makeup chair before the show and get face cake, despite the fact that you're on camera for 30 seconds. Alvin, when are you going to grow a porn stash like your sidekick? A stash would show off your virility with all those kids you have. Alvin's the Genghis Khan of radio. Sitting next to Alvin is the head producer, James Kelly. Hey, Kelly, The two-time NHRA champion, Cruz Pendragon, wants to know if he can drive his funny car across that quarter-mile drag strip that you call a forehead. And before I take off, I want to congratulate Dan in Denver for winning a golden ticket. And good job, Dan. It only took you 14 calls to finally earn that. I'm coming in here on Monday to rip my golden ticket. Book it.
Cal, you're close, dude. You're close. Baba. What's going on, Bodie?
Hey, man. Didn't you say that picking on XR4TI wouldn't win you the SmackDown?
That's what I said. Exactly right. I want to make that point,
too.
What
the hell is wrong with Cal? Does he listen to the show or what? But, Bubba, you know, I'm changing my game up. If you notice, my vernacular is a little bit clearer. My twang has lessened because Bodie is his worst damn enemy. People can't understand him. So that's why I ain't want a damn smack off. And I find it ripe that Brad and Corona is calling somebody a bitch. But, Rome, you can't spell bitch without B-I-C, right? And these two idiots from Canada, Tyler and Matt, don't even show up, but we know you will. You're like you're America's skid marks. You're like a turquoise baby blue pair of underwear on a 100-day burpee. I mean, you're going to be there even after washing. But, Rome, you know, I'm going to cut him some slack. That's a little bit of what I've got. I write my own damn material. I'll be there, Bub. I love you.
You too, Bodie. Bodie in Pearland. You know, my man Bodie is something else.
Good night now!